Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream seven national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Welcome into the Lions 24/7 podcast. It is National Signing Day week in Happy Valley and across the country in college football. Strange to say that still. Year number three of the early signing period, a three-day span in December, beginning this Wednesday, December 18th through Friday. Of course, there is the traditional National Signing Day, the first Wednesday in February, February 5th. But boy, oh boy, does it look a lot different than it used to, Sean. This is the big show, and Penn State's got a big day in front of them. 27 commits, and we're expecting them to put pen to paper and make this thing finalized.
Yeah, this is the big one now. I mean, everybody used to look as the first Wednesday in February is the big big day, but certainly not the case anymore. Penn State, basically, if you don't sign right now, you're probably not going to be committed. You're probably not going to be signing in February. Of course, Penn State, what they'll do is they'll reassess where they stand. They'll take the guys that are still out there in the board. And really, I mean, you just look at it. There's 27 guys. That's a lot of guys in one class. So there's not too much room to work with, but they'll reassess their situation. They'll see if there's guys out there who may be risers following the new year. Always happens. But right now, I mean, you got to look at this 27 and say, this is going to be your class, and really can't count much more. I mean, you take a look at, if you run the numbers, Penn State's over the 85 scholarship limit for the start of next season. So you're going to have attrition no matter what. But until you get there, I mean, it's a pretty solid group. Maybe not the group they set out to sign, but it's a pretty good group from top to bottom.
Sean Fitz, Tyler Donahue with you, recording on a Tuesday afternoon. We're getting ready for signing day coverage at Lions 24/7. We will be all in on Wednesday. Be sure to follow us throughout for spotlights on some of these signees. We will be in the Penn State war room as they're getting on the phone and Skyping with players and their families and officially putting their names on the board as Penn State signees. And we'll be in James Franklin's press conference later on Wednesday afternoon. But we'll also get a chance to speak with recruiting coordinators. So a lot of information coming your way. But we're going to get to a few particulars. You mentioned it being a big class, Sean, 27 commits. This would be, as it stands, the biggest recruiting class of James Franklin's time in Penn State. This is his seventh recruiting class, believe it or not, with the Penn State Nittany Lions. They signed 23 players in each of the past two classes, 21 in 2017, 20 in 2016, and 25 in 2015-2014. So shaping up to be that big, he had hinted at it being a massive class and saying that it could go to 30 players. That was back in July at Big Ten Media Days in Chicago, as you said. As things stand now, the numbers don't necessarily suggest that. And as we spoke before we were recording, you know, a couple of years ago, all the moving parts, including Micah Parsons and Jahan Dotson and Jason Owe and Rasheed Walker, you get to this and it's pretty drama-free this time of year, considering how else we've seen things shape up in mid-December.
That's been the case, and there's really not much to look forward to on Wednesday. And I hate saying that, especially as somebody that covers recruiting. But this is one that really came down from top to bottom. I mean, you look at all the guys that eventually will sign. This was a long cycle for Penn State, and you throw into everything that went into with the transfer portal last cycle, the attrition that they had, the numbers they were able to throw out there. Didn't really see them getting to 30. I thought they might top out around 29, but of course, a couple of decommits in the last couple of weeks has brought that number back down. Of course, Theo Johnson committed. We talked about him on the last episode to put it at 27 and hopefully stick there. It's this time of year, so anything can happen, but that's what we're expecting on Wednesday. It's just it's funny to follow because, you know, it's not the most talented class they've signed, but really you start at that 25 and you may, in any given year, you may go a couple over, a couple under. And when you laying those out there the way that you did, I think the 21 was the lowest in the last couple of cycles. It's pretty much how it's going to be every year out. I think you got to start at 25, take a couple more, take a couple less, and go from there. You're going to have transfers. There's different rules in terms of how transfers count and initial counters and all that kind of stuff that changes the way that you approach signing classes. It's not a situation where you're stashing guys that are academic casualties anymore. If you sign those guys, they count against you now. So that's certainly something to weigh into it. But 27 guys, man, no matter how you cut it, that's a lot.
And it includes a couple of junior college players out of Lackawanna, second straight year, signing a pair out of there. And then 25 high school seniors representing more than 10 states, a couple countries. And yeah, they're all over the map in this class for sure. And Sean, you mentioned, you mentioned the 27 players. Right now, that's a big total. It puts them at number 8 in 24/7 sports rankings. That's going to change as things progress into Wednesday. Penn State is they're going to be sitting kind of idle in terms of gaining things, barring any surprises. There's going to be programs out there that'll add players, move up. But number 8 right now, they signed the number 3 class in the 24/7 sports rankings last year. And then in 2018, the number 7 class. So as of right now, they're inside that top 10. Don't know that they'll make it for a third straight year. I would say odds are against it based on what you expect the other classes to do. But as you said, with this class, and I think you referenced it in something you wrote on the site, there's going to be some what-if moments and missing on guys here in the state, here in the region, five-star players who are going to go to teams that are competing for championships and competing against Penn State for playoff spots. But when you look at this group, Sean, 7 decommits, the last 2 of them coming this month, and they have found landing spots. Just wanted to update that. Elijah Gaines, the defensive back, has found a spot with the Virginia Cavaliers class. And then Devin Willock ends up with Georgia Bulldogs class, Sean. That was one that popped up this week, and I got to say, it was a program that was mentioned during his recruitment. For him to end up in Athens despite that injury and their offensive line coaching change, that was a bit of a surprise to me at this stage. But that happens. Those guys have found their homes. But let's talk about the players who have found a home in Happy Valley, Sean. And when you review this group, no one was committed before 2019. But it has been drama-free. I haven't had guys who are committed that have tried to take late visits that we know of. Maybe they have, and then it got squashed. But a lot of guys who have been sure things for a while. Sean, the 27 guys, though, all committing in 2019, that's something that kind of bucks the trend. You know, you look at recent classes, you have players committing before their junior years of high school. Pat Freiermuth, Zach Kuntz, Justin Shorter was in that group. Guys who committed quite early, and now we're seeing, most of these guys came on board toward the tail end of their junior season, or of their junior year, into the summer, and some more in the fall. So it's not one of those groups that there's a long history with. Sometimes it feels like it's a much longer march to the finish line for these guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, a year ago at this time, Penn State had Grant Toutant committed. He's, of course, going to sign with Ohio State on Wednesday. So, I mean, it's pretty interesting to track what happened in the class of 2020. You mentioned those 7 decommitments, and you don't want to stick on them, but I'll stick on them for a second. I mean, you got Derek Wingo as a guy that committed on Christmas last year, seemed to be all in for a while, and then just kind of faded away. He's going to sign with Florida. Aaron Parks and Josh Moten, the two from National Christian, both of them seem to fairly early commits in the class, Moten more so than Parks. And then, of course, they turn around in, I believe it was late spring, early summer. And now, of course, they're going to sign in the Big 12 and the SEC with Oklahoma and Texas A&M. So, I mean, it's just it's crazy how this happens these days. It's part of the game. It's interesting the way that Penn State handled it. And I'll say that on one side, because there wasn't much drama coming down the wire. And a lot of that was due to RJ Adams and the way that RJ Adams handled his recruitment. And I think that's a shot across the bow of those recruits. You saw him take an official visit to Kentucky, and for all intents and purposes, was just cut loose by Penn State. Now he's set to commit. I don't know if we're recording on Tuesday afternoon. He's set to commit, and I believe he's going to end up at Kentucky. But man, that's quite a fall, because he was sort of lingering out there for a long time. I think it came down to Kentucky and NC State. So, not to trash any other programs, but if you're going from Penn State to Kentucky and NC State, obviously there was a turn that you missed along the way. So, interesting development there. On the flip side, you've got a guy like Devin Willock, who Penn State kind of took a chance on late in the summer, early in his senior season, took a chance on him. He's got some tools. He's got some nice feet for being as big as he is. And then he gets that injury, and then all of a sudden, Georgia gives him the go-ahead. Well, going back to the summer, where you thought about where Devin Willock would end up, he seemed all in on Penn State, but at the same time, he took a visit to Georgia just beforehand. They didn't have a spot for him at that point. Then there's some coaching changes. All of a sudden, he turns around and flips it. I mean, that's about as much drama as you got going down the stretch. So it's just really interesting how this class made up. It seemed like it would, take one step forward, maybe two steps back. You had guys like Brian Bressy and Julian Fleming, who are the top two players in the 24/7 sports composite rankings. Bressy even said himself he thought he was coming to Penn State at one point. That didn't happen. Fleming, I guess, was earmarked to Penn State from the start, and that didn't happen. So it's just a long cycle for James Franklin. It just felt like, you know, no matter what they, you know, what, no matter how much they tried to scratch and claw and press their way through it, that 9-4 season that lost to Kentucky last year really put them, you know, just sort of spinning their wheels. And then you throw the transfer portal stuff on top of it. Not a lot of good vibes and good juice coming out of Happy Valley. But for them to turn that around the way that they have, excuse me, and I'm kind of rambling here, but they've gotten to 27 and really have, you know, sort of had to turn some guys away at some point, because they've just, you know, this is a quick turnaround job. The culture, as you mentioned in the past, seems very strong. And now all of a sudden, you can't take as many guys as you want because you have maybe more guys coming back on the roster. And I think that's a good thing. So it's been a long cycle. It's been a roller coaster. But I think Penn State is certainly ending on the right way, especially picking up Theo Johnson, their top target last week.
And we'll find out what kind of offseason momentum they can carry, you know, next Saturday when they exit the field in a game against Memphis. I know it's not a sexy matchup, and folks out there, a lot of you are hoping that it was going to be the Rose Bowl or maybe more of a marquee opponent. But an 11-win season, that'll get you far. It'll get you a top-10 finish, and it'll give Franklin more ammo on the recruiting trail. And comparatively to last year, as Sean, you just laid out, you know, different ballgame when you start to get to work with this 2021 class, you know, with more urgency. So with this 2020 group, let's take a look at some positions. We've gone over a lot of these guys on past episodes of the podcast, but as a refresher, and for some of you who maybe aren't necessarily tuned into recruiting until we get to this stage, although if you're listening to this show, you probably do enjoy some recruiting talk. Quarterback Micah Bowens, Sean, he is a guy who followed the footsteps of Tate Martell, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, two guys who went on to play Power 5 level at the quarterback position. Martell obviously now in Miami at wide receiver. But those two guys had a lot of success during their time at Bishop Gorman in Las Vegas. It's a powerhouse program that, you know, takes that national approach, and they'll get on planes and they'll schedule guys across the country and they'll welcome teams in. And, you know, with that kind of spotlight, you know that Micah Bowens is a guy who's used to the attention and knows, you know, what it takes to lead a locker room with a lot of top talent, because Bishop Gorman churns it out. You know, this is a kid, though, that's going to come in with less fanfare than we've seen from past quarterbacks. And when you look at past Bishop Gorman quarterbacks, he's ranked, you know, around number 25 in dual threat quarterbacks in the 24/7 sports rankings. But heck of a high school career for Micah Bowens, a guy who ended up with almost 8,000 total yards. And I'm sorry, 7,000 total yards. Don't want to give him too much credit. And then 85 total touchdowns during his career at Bishop Gorman, Sean. So the numbers are there. He's not going to wow you with his, you know, his physical status, but you know, he's somebody that I think you get here. You put him to work behind the scenes. You see what we've got, because, you know, beyond Will Levis, a bunch of unknown commodities in that quarterback room. When you talk about who is going to be competing behind Sean Clifford on the depth chart, moving toward 2020.
Yeah, this is one that I'm kind of conflicted on. Penn State, you know, as well as they've recruited across the board, that's always been the hang-up, has been quarterback recruiting. And right now, I don't know how much further Micah Bowens will take that argument. I mean, he's about 5'11 and a half, 195. Now, you know, he plays at a very, very strong high school program. He's won there. He's started there. He's been productive there. He is athletic. He's got a 4.5 documented time at a Nike opening at some point. So the athletic tools are there. Is he big enough? Is he strong enough? We saw him at camp over the summer, and certainly, you know, we're not blown away by his performance. So curious to see how his development goes. I mean, you've got guys in that room that, you know, that are all different shapes and sizes. Of course, Will Levis is the big guy, and Clifford's the, you know, the constant guy. Taquan Roberson's not a very big guy. Bowens is smaller than all of them. So I'm curious to see how that development's going to go. But, you know, you're going to take a chance on a guy from across the country, from one of the winningest programs in the country. We'll see where it goes from there. Like I said before, and I feel like I'm kind of knocking the kid, but he's not scaring anybody off in the 2021 class, and that's certainly a spot that you want to, you know, recruit hard in that next cycle.
And so they will have three quarterbacks: Roberson, Johnson, Bowens, all these guys that we don't know much about in terms of what they can do on a college football field. They'll head into 2020. It'll be interesting to see as that number three job, which has been sustained throughout the 2019 season, it adds another member. It's going to add a new coach soon. Penn State looking for a quarterbacks coach, offensive coordinator. We'll mention that a little bit later here in the show. But sticking on the recruiting trail, Sean, at running back, another really impressive class for Jawan Sider and the Nittany Lions. Both of the players coming out of Florida, Kevon Lee, Keziah Holmes. Let's start with Holmes because you mentioned him in your superlatives piece for this class that's up on the site right now on Lines 24/7. You mentioned his speed, and that's the name of his game. He's a guy who was on with us on the podcast before his senior season, discussed having to play, being tasked with playing defensive back early in his high school career, kind of falling out of love for the sport, then moving to quarterback and ultimately running back and really finding a renewed passion for the game. And it has led to big things. A lot of Power 5 offers. He had about 1,500 yards on the ground this year, more than 8 yards per carry. He's a guy who can get it done as a receiver as well, I think, out of the backfield. And he's considered one of the top 5 all-purpose backs in 24/7 sports rankings.
There's guys throughout this process that the more film that you watch on them or the more updates you get on them, the more you like them. And Keziah Holmes is one of those guys for me. I wasn't really sure how to feel about him. You know, it was kind of one of those guys that his numbers were all over the place as a junior. You mentioned he did play some Wildcat quarterback. He's all over the place. But, you know, as a senior, you throw that tape in and he puts that foot in the ground and he goes. And I think, you know, I'm not sure where he fits in because this running back room is quite an enigma right now going into the 2020 season because there's going to be 6 of them. But at the same time, I think he's a guy that would typically have early impact capabilities, can play on special teams, can do a lot of things. So big fan of Keziah Holmes, even though I'm not quite sure where he fits on the roster right away. I think he'd be a productive guy at Penn State. I think he can fit a couple of different roles for them. Of course, you've got Kevon Lee in that running back class as well. Naturally a bigger guy, pretty good athlete for, you know, I think he's right around 225, 230 right now. So a different style back, not only than Holmes, but a lot of what they have on the roster. So be interesting to see how he follows Noah Cain. I don't know that he has the instant impact. I don't know that he's got the burst that some of those other guys have, but at the same time, you know, we've seen that Noah Cain can be very productive in an offense like this. Kevon Lee, I think, can do the same. And that's another couple 4-stars from Florida, man. Jawan Sider's earning his keep.
And I'm going to ask you this question, and people are going to ask us this question over and over and over again until next September. What is that running back rotation going to look like next year? I mean, it is hard to figure out. Ricky Slade seems to be insinuating he's sticking around, and I know some people thought maybe he would end up exploring transfer portal opportunities as he went from the starter to you know, third or fourth guy in that depth chart when Cain was healthy. And we know what Cain did when he was rolling before the injury, and the way Journey Brown finished, you know, good luck getting the job away from him. And we're both on record about Devin Ford being an exciting prospect. So Jawan Sider's job, while it gets easier in terms of the talent he has, doesn't get much easier in terms of trying to figure out how to utilize it, and that's going to be a new offensive coordinator's task as well.
Yeah, I think you nailed it with the last point. You're not sure how the new guy's going to use his running backs. Maybe that's a couple of different two-back sets. Maybe that's something completely different. Who knows? But Penn State's got plenty of options. And the way that Journey Brown played down the stretch, I mean, you got to be feeling good about that room, no doubt about it. But you know at the same time, you know, what it was like to balance 4 carries. Now you're throwing a couple of other guys in there. Really excited to see what Devin Ford can do with a full off season because, you know, I think just physical development is kind of what held him back from those other guys. Ricky Slade can bounce back. He looked as good as he looked all year in the season finale. So it's such a weird dynamic because you don't go in there, you don't recruit running backs to redshirt them. And that's the way Penn State's gone about it in the last couple of years. It's a fascinating dynamic because there's a lot of talent in that room, and you know it's going to be one of those positions where you're looking down in a couple of years, and you know you see some guys go to the portal that still have some pretty good talent.
And meanwhile, wide receiver, that's a spot that there's question marks in a very different nature heading into the 2020 year. And these freshmen figure to be factors in that room, at least a couple of them. You're bringing in a JUCO prospect. You know, you always hear you don't bring junior college players in to really sit them, but Norvell Black will have 3 years to participate in 2 seasons. Malik Mega, who is, you know, one of those classic raw high ceiling talents. And I don't know if there's much classic about a 6'4" kid who runs a 4.4 something 40 yard dash. very unique prospect. And then Jaden Dotton was one of their earlier targets at wide receiver in this cycle, a guy who I think he ended up falling a bit in the final 24/7 sports rankings. And the two guys that stand out to me, and we've kind of gone over this and hammered the point home about potential instant impact players in the entire class. I think two of them atop this wide receiver group, Parker Washington out of Fort Ben Travis High School in Texas, and then Keandre Lambert out of Norfolk, Virginia. Wouldn't surprise me if either one of those players ends up logging some starts as a true freshman.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think it's Washington and Lambert at the top of this wide receiver group. I think Washington looks ready to come in right away. Of course, he's not a January kid, so that may have affect some things going into next summer. But Keandre Lambert's going to be here. He's a fantastic football player, man. He tests really well, and on top of that, he's a good offensive player, a good defensive player at the high school level. Just won a state championship for Maury over the weekend. So I'm really excited to see what Keandre Lambert can do. He's got a 3.83 shuttle on the books right now, which is as good as they've seen or as good as they've brought in at the high school level. So really quick, really fast. Both guys, I think, could be inside out guys. Parker Washington, I think people forget that he's over 200 pounds at 5'10". I mean, he's a pretty stout type of guy. I don't know where the comparisons would fall to a guy like Bill Belton that was brought in as a receiver and eventually was a running back, but he's got a running back style body. And on top of that, he makes some terrific catches. First team All-State 6A in Texas is something to hang your hat on, and Parker Washington was that. So I have those guys at the top. The two at the bottom, as far as long-term developmental guys, Jaden Dotton and Malik Mega, and I say the bottom, and I just kind of how I'm labeling these guys in a hierarchy in terms of development. But those guys are both long, rangy athletes. Mega's very fast. Dotton is very quick. So we'll see how those guys develop over the next couple of years. And then Norval Black's sort of right in the middle. You mentioned you don't bring in JUCO guys to redshirt, but this is a guy that's still 173 pounds. After his second year at Lackawanna. So he's going to need to get bigger. I don't think there's any question about it. He's explosive. He's quick. He does some really nice things in the football field. But as we saw with guys like Jaquan Brisker and Anthony Wiggin this year, it's a big jump up from that JUCO level all the way up to the Big Ten.
I believe Steve Wiltfong, director of recruiting for 24/7 Sports, had mentioned when he was talking about what he liked about Parker Washington, saying he kind of does turn into a power back when he gets possession of that football. I mean, he's a smooth wide receiver out there, but there's guys will try to dance around, guys will look toward the sideline at receiver, and he's not one of them. And by the way, Keandre Lambert, a very willing blocker at the high school level. You'll watch his film, and a guy who has played defensive back, and played with some physicality. So not someone who's really going to glance away from that aspect of competition. And speaking of pass targets, you factor in the tight ends here, and we talked about them a lot last week, Sean, so I don't want to dive too into it, but Theo Johnson was considered one of the best in the country at his position. His recruitment reflected that. The attention was warranted, and he's going to be in line, in my opinion, to come and really push Zach Kuhns, Brenton Strange, to take over as that primary number two tight end behind Pat Freiermuth in 2020. And then Tyler Warren, who you referred to in your superlatives as the mystery man, and that's what I've been calling him. And you call him the mystery man, you call Theo Johnson the high ceiling guy of the class, and you throw those two to Tyler Bowen and what he's already got working in the tight end room. And, it's a compelling part of this roster. There's no doubt about it.
Both 6'5 and a half, 235, 240 in there. Both can run, both pretty good high school athletes in their own right. So really interested to see how the development goes. Warren is a complete mystery. I put up his highlights, his basketball highlights on Lions 24/7 earlier today. You get a look at what he brings to the table as an athlete because, you see close to 6'6", 235, tight end. You kind of think big white stiff, but if you go out and you look at his basketball highlights, he's a guy, and he's not Mike Gesicki, but he's a guy that makes some Gesicki-like plays on the basketball court. He's also a good baseball player. So you have to like what he brings to the table. Like I said, I'm not sure where he's at in 3 or 4 years, but if he were ahead of Johnson at that point, it wouldn't be a complete surprise. That said, Theo Johnson's ranked where he's ranked for a reason. There's a reason Penn State wanted him so bad down the stretch. I do think he has among the highest ceiling in this class. I think he can be a first-round pick eventually if he continues to develop. He's got the athletic skills. He's just learning how to work, and I think that's sort of what can go into, you know, when you're evaluating these guys, sometimes you don't realize how much they get done behind the scenes. It sort of clicked for him about a year ago, and this after Penn State had offered and some of the other schools started coming through, just how good he can be, and now he's starting to realize that. So really excited about this tight end class. And you know, it's kind of funny because you don't want to say, you never really want to say that the tight end group is the best group on the offense, but when you have two guys like this, I think it warrants consideration, because usually when you say that about that point in the offense, you're going to start talking about, well, the receivers aren't there, the offensive line isn't there, the quarterbacks or whatever. Yeah, I think it's a really great group of tight ends. Tyler Bowen has shown he can do a heck of a job with guys like Pat Freiermuth. Excited to see how Zach Kuntz and Brenton Strange, you know, develop into the spring, especially with Nick Bowers gone. But it's going to be fun to watch, because whoever they throw out there, it's one of those things where you kind of have trust in whoever they throw out there. They're going to be productive, and I think there's a good couple of years in the pipeline for this at this tight end position. And that's, of course, Nick Elksness is committed out of Florida in the 2021 class as well.
Yeah, do you suppose James Franklin wants to find an offensive coordinator who values the tight end position with this search? Because they certainly are stacked in that spot right now. At offensive line, this was, I mean, you want to talk about the roller coaster ride of this class in general. Offensive line was really at the center of it. In a lot of instances, you mentioned RJ Adams, Grant Toutant, Aaron Parks, all these members at one point no longer, but they do get to the finish line here with a solid collection. They don't have anybody who's ranked as highly as Rasheed Walker was, or Inanna Asedu a couple years ago, or Caden Wallace last year, but it's a collective group where, you know, I think they did a nice job addressing tackle. Adding Jimmy Crist late in the process in November, a guy who was committed to Virginia, I think that was important. Keeping Olu Fashanu, you know, a guy who committed in June, didn't hear much beyond that, keeping him on board. And then I think Ibrahim Traore, getting to see him in person in camp and knowing the effort he put in to get to that last prospect camp, getting a couple different buses from New York City to get there, earn his offer. He's somebody that really stands out to me, you know, who committed in mid-September, where, you know, down the line really turns into an impressive perimeter offensive lineman, maybe someone who was a little overlooked. And that happens when you talk about a setting like New York City at times. I'll tell you what, though, Sean. This tackle class got a lot better after the season started, because they lost some pieces in the summer. They were able to pick up Traore, able to pick up Crist over the course of the season, and I think those were two very important pickups.
They had 9 offensive linemen committed during this cycle. That's insane to think about. And they're going to end up with 3 tackles and 2 guards, which is about what we set out. You know, you want to take as many tackles as possible, but you know, you've got true tackles in Jimmy Crist and Olu Fashanu. I think Ibrahim Traore can fit that well. He's got tremendous length out there, very strong kid as well. And then in the interior, you've got Golden Israel Achumba and Nick Dawkins, who's kind of one of the centerpiece leaders of this group. So be really interested to see how they develop. Crist is the only one under 300 pounds right now, so not sure how I feel about that. I mean, if you listen, you know I'm a bigger fan of building these guys up. But at the same time, I mean, these guys have already done a lot of the work. I mean, Golden Achumba was 370 pounds at one point. He's under 320 right now. Olu Fashanu was up to 340, 345. He's under 310 right now. So be really interesting to see how these guys go. I think the sleeper of this group, and he's a high three, you know, he's kind of a borderline 4-star anyway, but Olu Fashanu, I think, can be really good. I think he's, you know, he's a productive high school offensive lineman, second team all met this season, but he's such a big guy. He's so hard to get around. 6'5" and a half, maybe 6'5 3/4. But yeah, he's got a lot of potential. I know a lot of coaches down in that area like what he brings to the table. So they've got some big, just massive guys in this class. So really interested to see how this projects in the next couple of years. Of course, they had Devin Willock, who was bigger than anybody. But at the same time, you're replenishing those numbers. You end up with 5. You were maybe thinking about taking 6 at one point, but you've got a bunch of guys that can play tackle. Just sort of replenish those ranks. We saw last year, I think that Sal Wormley was the only guy on scholarship on the scout team. So now you're going to get a chance to get those guys some scout team reps, maybe get back to a little bit more of a normal cycle on the offensive line, and see what you have in a couple of years.
shed a little bit more light on one of those interior offensive linemen with Nick Dawkins, who's been very good to us here on the show, join us for a couple of different interviews, and hopefully got a chance to listen to those if you've been tuned in for a while here on the podcast. But he's a guy, you mentioned it, he's got those leadership abilities, and that's not an easy thing to do when you're talking about, you know, 27 guys from all across the country, a couple from Canada. You know, you got to be pretty assertive to get people to view you in that kind of light, and I think he's done a nice job of that. You know, I don't necessarily know what his career will look like to start, but I think in terms of someone who made a lot of steps forward as a senior, I think when you view what he did this year at Parkland in Allentown, Pennsylvania, really showed a lot and is reflected in the rankings. He's up to number 22 in the guard spot. When you look at 24/7 Sports and how they evaluate that position, that's a significant rise from where he was, and he's done a nice job on his body as well, not to the extreme that you've seen from a guy like Achiumba that you mentioned. But you know, he's somebody that continues to grow. His father is an NBA star back in the day, Daryl Dawkins. So you love the pedigree there athletically. And I think, you know, he's certainly someone that, again, a lot of three stars here. You like the chances for at least two, three of them to maybe go above that pay grade. And if they don't, then maybe you're looking at some issues on the offensive line down the road here. But you know, I think they do have a solid assemblage. And it's not going to be one that gets a lot of attention at the national level in terms of what offensive line classes are going where to different campuses. You know, but you bring in some volume there and you're facing a situation next season where you don't need to force anybody to get on the field or really in a lot of spots in the two deep initially because of what they've been able to bring back, what we think they're going to bring back in 2020. We're going to turn attention towards the defensive side of this recruiting class, but first a quick word from our sponsor.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has three episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, April 26th on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Bringing it back to the 2020 Penn State recruiting class, we'll take our breakdown of the defensive side of the football, go across the trenches, and look at the defensive line group. And Sean, I think, you know, not to the level of the offensive line where we said it's a lot of three stars, high three stars. You know, you're not looking here at PJ Mustipher, Jason Away kind of ranking reflected for any of these guys. But for me, the conversation starts with the defensive tackle out of Indianapolis, Cole Brevard. He's someone who played for a team that was a major contender there in Indiana, and he looked like double, triple teamed just about every rep of his upperclassman career. I like the way this kid is built. You saw him on the camp, on the field for Penn State back in July. I don't think he participated, but just standing there, he looked like he was already like in his third year with the program. And when you see that from an interior defensive line where it looks like the pieces are put together in a lot of ways, he's someone that I think that could come in and make an impact. But at defensive tackle, we already know that this current freshman class, a lot of guys are going to be hunting down reps next year.
Well, they're throwing numbers at the defensive line, and I think that's the way to go about it. Now, they're kind of all over the place in this class because you've got a guy like Brevard who's maybe just more of a typical one technique. I don't think he's tremendously explosive. He's not going to be the pass rusher that you're really looking to, but I think he can be a productive member of this team and really help them out. I think he could definitely be a starter. But there's a lot of defensive tackles in this class, and that's they're not all ready to go right now, and I don't think you would expect that anyway, especially based on what we've seen the last couple of years. But you've got Brevard. We have Keziah Izzard, who, you know, was a defensive end for the longest time. I mean, his body, I mean, he's in the 280s right now. So I'm sorry to Keziah, but he's not going back to play end anymore. Amin Vanover may be a guy like a Hakeem Beamon that starts out at defensive end. Eventually, you know, he blows up his body's going to move him down the line. Then you got Fatoru Mamoba. This is a really interesting guy because every time you look at him, I mean, he's built like a you know, a brick house, if you will. And he's just a strong kid, 16 reps of 225 at camp last year, just raw as can be. But at the same time, I mean, he's got a lot of the tools that you're looking for athletically that you can pull in and you know, make a productive Big Ten player. So I'm looking across the board, and there's reasons to be excited about all these guys. But Mulba is just the most intriguing to me, going from top to bottom, because, you know, he doesn't have that shine. I mean, it's going to take a lot from Sean Spencer to get him where he needs to be. But I think when he gets there, he's got length, he's got explosion, he's got a lot going for him, and he's still learning how to play the game. Mulba is one of those guys, those sleeper guys that you can, you know, throw into the mix, and a couple of years from now, you can say, man, how wasn't this guy ranked higher?
He has credited Jordan Hill, former Penn State defensive lineman, as being a mentor to him, helping refine his technique and really understanding what it took to become a Power 5 level prospect. This is a guy who, you know, just look at this February, Sean, he didn't have an offer. I don't know how many players in this class you can say that about. He probably is the only guy when you think February 2019, zero FBS offers. Penn State ended up being his ninth offer. He moved pretty quickly on that, and you wonder if he had held out and traction had continued to grow, if the Nittany Lions would have faced more considerable competition for him. But, you know, finished second this season in sacks in the mid-pen. He's a guy that I think when you say who can maybe provide some of that push in the interior, get into the pocket, he's the guy who probably stands out to me a bit in that defensive tackle group.
I don't know if it's because of where he's from in central Pennsylvania, but kind of reminds me, you don't know this guy, but Abe Caroma in the last decade, just kind of a really strong kid, a really hold him up type, but also has got some twitch to him. So I'm excited to see how he goes. Another guy you can probably throw into that mix, Brandon Taylor, is a high school defensive end. I think he's a guy that maybe still projects as a defensive tackle. It could be a situation like Vanover, where he starts his career at defensive end, and eventually when the weight does come on, he moves down to defensive tackle. You know, they like what they see from him as well. If you're looking at this class and trying to find holes, and there's certainly holes in this class, defensive end is a spot where they tried to get Sean Martin late. They tried to get on a couple of guys throughout the process and really never quite popped the way that you got on Adisa Isaac or Jason Owe, somebody that's a pure pass rusher. Bryce Mostella is every bit the enigma that his commitment video would imply. 6'6", we haven't listed 6'7", he's probably about 6'6", 235. Very long, very flexible, very athletic. A long way to go in terms of putting it together on the football side of things. Zariah Fisher, maybe your best defensive lineman just based off of high school tape. He's probably going to start out at linebacker and move down to defensive end. So there's really not that guy in this class at defensive end. And we know that's such a vital position, such a premium position in the college football game. Really, defensive end, I don't want to say it fell short, because there are some intriguing options there, but it's really a spot where you're looking at where Penn State maybe tries to address in January, goes after a guy here or there in January. I think defensive end's that spot.
And it's tricky because there's not like a major separation between one guy and the rest of the guys at the position in this class. You know, again, kind of like the offensive line to me, it's a cluster of, you know, guys who are maybe low 4 stars, high 3 stars when you look at the evaluations. And, you know, you wonder who's going to come to campus and break out. You know, there's not a lot of guys that you're looking at and saying, you know, he's going to come and he's going to push right away as a freshman. We know that's very difficult to do on the defensive line, particularly at defensive tackle. The only player, you know, who's put himself in a position to burn that red shirt as a true freshman under Sean Spencer at Penn State was PJ Mustipher. Very special talent, top 5 defensive tackle prospect coming in. You saw Adisa Isaac get worked in, but I think he's at a different tier, as you said. And, you know, I'm very curious about a lot of things with Bryce Mostella, mentally, physically. I look forward to speaking with this kid. Hopefully, can get him on the podcast before he gets to campus. If not, we'll be waiting a while to get in touch with him. But with that size, and he certainly an interesting player to say the least. And I will say, Amin Vanover, another kid coming from St. Joe's Regional in Montvale, New Jersey, that just is going to look like a 21-year-old as soon as he steps foot on campus. This is a big dude, and he's another one of those players that, you know, I think Sean Spencer will have fun with. I say this, I feel like, every cycle, but he's going to let his imagination run with some of these guys because of how they're physically structured when they first get here.
Yeah, and that's going to be part of this roster building process, is they threw a lot of numbers at those positions, but now where do you go? I mean, taking five defensive tackles, if it comes to that, that's a lot of defensive tackles. So we'll see what happens in the next couple of seasons. Vanover is a guy that we have him listed as a strong side defensive end. He's 265 pounds right now. I mean, it just goes back to nature and logic and things like that. I don't think he's going to stay at defensive end. And, you know, to be frank, I mean, he's not the twitchiest guy out there in the end. Smith Vilbert, who was a teammate of his at St. Joseph Regional, a little more athletic, a little bit more of a pass rushing profile out there on the edge. Vanover, to me, can be a successful defensive tackle. He can be that guy. And he's, I mean, that's some legit size to throw in there at 6'4". Penn State's been missing that at times in the last couple of years. So excited to see how Amin Vanover goes, where these guys end up. And this is probably the group that, you know, it's toughest to forecast, because I think there's a lot of potential in that defensive line class. But, man, that's a lot of scholarships to throw at one particular group.
And Zariah Fisher, as you said, linebacker, edge rusher, to me, out of this entire class, he's the one that you think this guy, to me, I think he could do the most damage off the edge out of this group. But again, we're not sure if he's going to start out in that linebacker room. As of right now, they'll have a couple blue chips coming in at linebacker. Curtis Jacobs tops the list of all players in this group. He's right on the borderline of five-star status when you look at 24/7 sports rankings at this stage. And you've said it time and time again. You've written it again in the superlatives. Best player on the field. Doesn't matter where he's lined up. And I am inclined to agree with you. And I think Tyler Elsdon, a guy who, you know, kind of snuck in under the radar a little bit with his commitment this summer when the class was going through a bunch of changes, and he's a Pennsylvania kid, grew up in a Penn State supportive community, and he got a four-star bump this season. He's someone who I think, you know, could, you know, for people who don't have their finger on the pulse of recruiting, they may look back 2 years ago and say, where did this Tyler Elsdon kid come from? And we'll have to remind him that he was actually a four-star prospect, and you look at 24/7 sports evaluation.
Close to a 4.0 GPA as well. Elsdon will be a fan favorite of a lot of Penn State fans. You can throw every cliche out there that you want, but that's what's going to happen. He's also going to be a guy at some point during his career, he's going to grow a mustache and he's going to be a cult figure. So I don't want to heap those expectations on him too early, but he can also play football. He's one of those two-way guys, and Penn State have really gotten away from recruiting some guys like this. You know, we say Penn State doesn't want to recruit typical just middle linebacker types, and then all of a sudden, you know, they find themselves struggling at that position. Well, Elsdon can also play on the outside. He's very he's a lot quicker than he looks. I mean, I don't think that he's going to burn anybody in a 40 or anything like that, but I mean, this is a kid that ran a 4-1 shuttle at camp last year. So he can move laterally more than you would think, finish his plays. He's also a high school running back, which we've seen in the, I guess, the research to the NFL draft. You want your linebackers playing running back. You want them playing all over the place. This group, to me, the linebacker group, is my spot on defense. I love what they did here. Of course, I'm a huge fan of Curtis Jacobs and Tyler Elsdon. Now, they did lose Derek Wingo, but Tyler Elston's probably a better high school linebacker than Derek Wingo, who's more of a probably a 3-4 pass rushing type guy. I think he'd be very productive at Florida, but you've got different kind of players in there, and sometimes you need a guy like Tyler Elsdon to sort of solidify that linebacker group.
During the last two seasons, we saw three true freshman linebackers burn their red shirt for Penn State: Micah Parsons, Jesse Lucchetta in 2018, and then this fall, Brandon Smith. And for a while, it looked like Lance Dixon was on that track. He was greenlit coming out of preseason camp, decided not to burn a year of eligibility for him, but it's a spot where we have seen players come in, and if they adjust accordingly, Brent Pry has found spots for them on the football field. In the defensive backfield, for me, I got to start with Joseph Johnson, because, again, I keep referencing the time, you know, getting to see him in camp earlier, and just that length is just so rare. And I'm sure you saw it on social media where he's doing the incredible leap. You match that leaping ability, that athleticism, with this kid's frame. I mean, he is long-limbed. I don't think he's quite on Joey Porter Jr.'s level in terms of those arms, but he may be darn close, and there's just a lot to like about this kid. I am stunned he is still a 3-star in composite rankings. I know he's a 4-star in 24/7 sports, and he's somebody, when we look at how the cornerbacks were used here in 2019, three true freshmen saw significant time, two of them, Keaton Ellis and Marquise Wilson, burning their red shirts by the end of the season. I like his chances to come in and make an impression.
Yeah, I do too. And I think they can play him. Like, they have some flexibility with what they're doing right now. Of course, if you get Tariq Castro Fields back, it changes some things. Donovan Johnson's injury, of course, something huge for that cornerback room as well. But Joseph Johnson's a different kind of corner. I mean, he's a new age corner. He's the one that these scouts and these coaches love. He's got he's close to 6'2", got those long arms, can run. I think he's got some things to work on in terms of finer points of the position. But yeah, I think he's got a lot of potential. He's also a January guy. I could see him playing right away next year. So really interested to see. We mentioned maybe a hole at defensive end. You'd have liked to add another corner there. Maybe you get some flexibility with a guy like Enzo Jennings or something like that. Maybe he can play some corner. Joseph Johnson, to be frank, I mean, I think we're both kind of surprised that he's still in the class based on how the first half of his recruitment went. But at the end of the day, they're pretty happy to have him. And I'm curious to see and excited to see how he develops, because physically he's really got everything you need.
That was a big win for Penn State to get him on board in this class when they did. And it's been even bigger for them not to, that the door has not been open for him exploring other options. Him, his family, they all have seemed on board with the Nittany Lions since that commitment came through. And as you said, it was a really tough one to navigate through in terms of his recruitment and where it may end up for a while. In terms of the safety spot, stop me if you heard this before. They're bringing in an All-American from the junior college ranks from Lackawanna College.
Yep, Jair Brown, a guy that earned an offer at camp this year, was a first-team All-American in the junior college ranks, close to 6 foot, 205. He ran well at camp, really performed very well. They allow JUCOs to come in and compete now, and, he really showed that, not only that he was physical enough, but he was a couple years older than some of those guys and really more than held his own, had a really good day at camp. They offered him, bookended that with a great season in 2019. So we'll see what happens. It's funny because, high on Jair Brown as an athlete, as a player, I think he could definitely run. He's got some size to him. But I do think Jaquan Brisker was a better prospect coming out. We saw what kind of impact Jaquan Brisker had on the team this year. Probably not as much as we thought it was going to be coming into the season. So we'll see where that goes. Brown's, he's got a nose for the football. He's been around. He had some picks. He can also, when he can stay healthy, he can make some tackles. So curious to see where this one goes in the next couple of seasons. As you mentioned, Norval Black has a redshirt year. Jair Brown also has a redshirt year. But both of these guys will still be on campus at Lackawanna in the spring, which I think may stifle their development where they stand right now.
Safety is a spot where they're going to lose at least one starter. Garrett Taylor moving on for his senior year. We certainly think Lamont Wade sticking around for his final year of eligibility. But Jonathan Sutherland still has plenty to prove in that spot, especially if you're talking about an expanded role. Same goes for Jaquan Brisker. Didn't see much of Tyler Rudolph over the course of his freshman year. And so unlike the cornerback spot where we saw some of those true freshmen, really making a dent in the rotation over the course of the season, I think safety, Sean, is one where, maybe this is a spot where a freshman could come in and make some noise. And Enzo Jennings, at the high school level, we talk about Brown coming in with 2 years of eligibility. Well, you've got a high schooler coming in who's pretty special. He's the last name we'll get to here, but he is ranked third among all Penn State commits at this point, second-ranked defender behind only Curtis Jacobs.
He's really been a forgotten guy in this class. I mean, we don't talk nearly enough about Enzo Jennings, a very productive high school player at Oak Park in Michigan, which is a program that has put out some very talented players and a ton of prospects. So we'll see where it goes with that. He's got the flexibility if they do need him at corner, which I don't really expect him to get there. Maybe you throw him at corner. You throw him at corner in the spring to get some coverage experience, which is what they've done with players in the past. Then eventually move him to safety. I'm not sure that he's an early impact guy. He's a guy that's still needs to put on some weight, get a little bit stronger. We saw, I think he's kind of similar to Tyler Rudolph in that aspect. Tyler Rudolph looked ready to go when he was with his peers in high school, and then all of a sudden you take that jump to the next level, and it kind of changes some things. So don't know that Jennings is a guy that steps in right away and competes for a starting job or anything like that, but he's got length in that defensive backfield. He can run around back there. I think he's a really good prospect and a guy that we probably forget about in this class.
It's going to be interesting to see how those things mesh between safety and cornerback, because it feels like, because of the experience they have, because of what the 2-deep looks like, even the 3-deep, certainly seems like cornerback room's a little bit more bountiful right now when you project it towards 2020 than what you've got at safety depth based on those known commodities, of course, Tyler Rudolph could prove to be a very good player as a breakout season when he gets the opportunity. We just don't know that yet. I think they're a little more definability when you talk about the cornerback room versus safety room. Could we see a position switch from someone? I don't know, but it's an interesting thing to keep tabs on. Not a huge defensive back class at this point, as Penn State's going to sign this group on Wednesday. Full coverage of signing day is online, 247.com. Sean has his class superlatives up, and at really good read. I'd suggest checking that one out. And Sean, at the risk of giving you more work, there is a great VIP thread up that Sean is responding to inquiries about this recruiting class, and I'd imagine a few other topics as well along the way. But Sean's always the go-to for those kind of things. So if you're a VIP member, you probably already know this, and if you're not, well, then it's time to jump on board. Sean, before we get to signing day mode, and we're already there, we've been there, just a few notes to go through. Micah Parsons, stop if you heard this one before. First team All-American, according to ESPN and the Associated Press, both of those outlets announcing their All-American teams on Monday. And we're now in a territory now where this is a consensus All-American kind of situation. First team consensus, really. I don't know how that all gets parsed and what rank and what first teams matter and which All-American teams people ignore, but they're starting to rack up, and he's been on a lot of first team All-American teams. And again, it's just kind of breathtaking that he's already viewed in this kind of light nationally. I think it's surprising for a lot of us who cover this team day to day. I mean, we know what he's about. We all cover his recruitment. But to see him getting this kind of recognition at a college football wide level has been really an early surprise of the postseason experience for me.
Yeah, it's big for the program as well to throw these out there every day to say that they can compete and have those All-American level guys. Second team by CBS Sports in the Sporting News today as well. So don't think he's going to get that consensus, but for being where he's at, for. I think when we talk about Micah Parsons, you talk about, of course, he came in with the reputation that he did, phenomenally talented. Everybody expected him to be an All-American, and now he's an All-American. I think that says good things for the development, for the staff that they can throw out there. Micah, of course, is, in my opinion, still just scratching the surface of what he can be. I do think that you're gonna hear a lot of first round talk about him in the next draft as well. So. I mean, it's been really cool to watch, and like you mentioned, I mean, we see so much of this team sometimes that maybe you don't think about him as one of the top three linebackers in the country. But when you talk to other people around the country, I mean, this is a guy that has really turned heads. He's really got people that just think incredibly highly of his talent. I think it's a good thing for Penn State. It's a good thing for the way that they've been able to develop. And it's a really good thing for James Franklin and Brent Pry, because, also with that reputation of Micah Parsons being a tremendous football player, he had that reputation of being a potential trouble spot for a program. So far, that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, and wow, the plan has come together very quickly for Micah Parsons. Just think about 2 years ago where he was, wrestling with the decision. Would he re-enter Penn State's recruiting class? Would he head out of Pennsylvania, maybe head off to the SEC? And it took a while for him to get to the finish line and determine what he wanted to do with his college career, but it couldn't have worked out much better for him so far. Although he'll tell you he wants to be a national champion, a Big Ten champion, and those are all the things he's going to have in his crosshairs next year, as well as the abundant individual accolades that should be available for him as a junior. We're going to have Bull Media Day on Friday, so we'll get a chance to check in with a lot of players, hopefully get some updates. I certainly think we're going to have some questions fired away to guys like KJ Hamler, Shaka Toney, regarding their draft status, guys who are eligible for the draft who have not yet announced where they are leaning one way or another. We may not find out some of this until after the bowl game. So we'll be out there, though, for Bull Media Day. Sean, also, I know a lot of our listeners are probably wondering if there's anything out there that you'd be willing to share. The offensive coordinator search, it has been very quiet. I'm sure there are very few people who actually know where the thing is moving and who's certainly right in the mix. But as of now, they're a week into this thing and they have not filled the position. We do not know who will be calling the plays in the Cotton Bowl yet. But it's remains a storyline, and it's something that a lot of people are focused in on as coaching staffs are getting shuffled across the country right now.
Yeah, we got flight tracking threads. We've got where is James Franklin at all times? I mean, and this is a search committee I don't want to say a search committee of one, but it's close. James Franklin handling all that stuff, and that's the way he does with these things, and he's been pretty successful with it. So not a ton of leaks when you're going from a circle of one. But it's one of those things. You don't need to have somebody in place by today, which, of course, would be National Signing Day. We'll see if that stretches out. You know, you've got NFL teams finishing up. You've got college teams in bowl games and playoffs and things like that. So we'll see which direction that heads. Then you've got the coaches' convention in early January in Nashville, which is typically a spot where you see interviews take place, you know, as guys go to fill out staff. So really quiet on that front. Not really a tremendous surprise. We're talking about what we're hearing on Lions 24/7, so I do suggest you check that out, because any snippet of red meat that comes available, people hop all over it, and we're trying to do what we can just to appease the masses, I guess.
One more note before we get out of here, Sean. We spent a ton of time last fall talking about Saquon Barkley, what he accomplished in his first NFL campaign. I feel like we got to give Miles Sanders a little bit of love on the show today. Certainly not going to match Saquon Barkley's productivity, and he's not going to be the NFL Rookie of the Year this year. But on Sunday against your Washington squad, he set a Philadelphia Eagles rookie record for rushing yards in a single season and all-purpose yards in a single season, topping LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson, respectively, in those stats. The Eagles have been around since 1933, so that's a lot of rookie running backs who have had their chance to establish positive marks with the Eagles. And you know, Miles Sanders, a guy who very clearly felt confident and he was ready to take the next step. He's in the NFL now. He was the second running back off the board, and he's very much showing he belongs. And hey, he's in the thick of a playoff race. Say what you will about the NFC East, but he's an important figure in the NFC, postseason chase right now. So I figured I'd throw that out there too. That's not just because he was against your squad, but I think Miles Sanders is a guy that don't look now, but he's coming on strong.
I was going to say, I have plenty of things to say about the NFC East, but we're not going to do that because we're a family podcast. It's been really cool to see Miles. And, I don't watch a ton of Eagles games by choice, but there's something different when he's out there. And you take a look at the backs that they have, and they've got some guys that have been productive in the NFL, but Miles is just at a different level. I was playing against my Redskins, so that you can put anybody at a different level. But at the same time, he's been phenomenal. Don't think he's going to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year. But he's going to be close, and he's going to be involved in there. Also, coincidentally, not sure that he had the best week of Penn State running backs or former Penn State running backs. How about Nick Yeary, man? I mean, he's the former, I guess now former Penn State running back, walk-on, of course, kind of a cult hero, scored earlier in the year against Idaho. He got his scholarship awarded to him to close the banquet the other night, the Penn State football banquet. Couldn't happen to a better guy, and you've seen some of his teammates and former teammates that have applauded him and said that he fully deserves it. So we're really happy for Nick Yeary. That scholarship means that his fall and this upcoming spring are covered. He was announced with the seniors. I don't know that any headway has been made on him coming back for next year, or if this was just a ploy by James Franklin to get him back for next year, which is a joke, people. It's really great when you see something like that happen. Yeary, if you take a look at the comments from Miles Sanders, from Michael Mennett, guys that have reached out via Twitter, certainly deserves it. And it's always one of the coolest parts. We get so cynical about following college football. That's one of the coolest parts about it, no doubt.
Member of the Long Boys and getting his due. And man, I'll tell you what, it was fun to watch him run the way he was able to against Idaho. I'm sure that's a moment he will never, ever, ever forget. And just as at the banquet getting this scholarship, by the way, at that banquet, the Yeary thing was the coolest thing to come out of here. A couple of notes, though. Most valuable player, the team giving that to KJ Hamler. Offensive MVP going to Pat Freiermuth. Defensive MVP to Micah Parsons. I think that's going to do it for us here in the Lions 24/7 podcast. We will come at you with a second episode later this week. As I said, we plan on having some guests. You're going to hear from some coaches. We'll give you some more feedback. And if there are any surprises on National Signing Day, we'll have you covered on that. For now, turn your attention to Lions 24/7, and we'll have a ton of content coming your way as you get to know these newest Nittany Lions on Wednesday and into the week, and then it's Cotton Bowl time all of a sudden. So a lot going on in Happy Valley. We'll talk to you soon. Wishing you all a great gear up for your Christmas season. I got some shopping to do. Talk to you soon.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful.
You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.